everyone, and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Raina Malhotra, and doing our audio engineering tonight is James Ziprot. Here on Teen Scientist, I aim to bring you stories of groundbreaking innovation in the STEM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. We feature young researchers and respected experts in their fields at the local, national, and international levels. Tonight, we have the privilege of speaking with our special guest, Sophie Chen. How are you doing tonight, Sophie?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. And thank you so much for joining us. It's so amazing to hear that you're doing well. And thank you for being here today. Now, before we get started, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah. So my name is Sophie Chen. I'm currently 17. And I recently graduated from high school. And so I went to Cattaparis-Magnet High School, and I'm from Louisiana.
Awesome. And do you mind telling us a little bit about your major interests and hobbies, kind of your favorite subjects in schools and what type of clubs and leadership things that you do?
Yeah. So some of my favorite subjects are probably like statistics or CS-related classes. And in terms of clubs and leadership positions, I'm an advocate for mental health and equality for girls in underserved communities to have access to more resources. I was class president for 3 years, and I founded a mental health club.
Amazing. And you mentioned kind of statistics and STEM. Is that something that you've always been interested in, or was it a field that you kind of slowly got more interested in as you got older?
I think it was something I eventually got used to, kind of like more acquired, because initially I didn't really like these classes, but I started to kind of enjoy the prospect of, you know, solving these problems and, you know, the feeling you get whenever you get questions right and start to understand concepts.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And is there a moment that kind of science and research particularly sparked an interest for you? Like, was there a particular memory or experience that you have that, you know, you kind of remember that your curiosity was ignited?
I guess it was more of like something I kind of grew up with. Like, since my parents both have somewhat of a background in STEM, it kind of, you know, motivated me to continue pursuing the STEM field.
And you kind of mentioned that you grew up with it. What kind of resources did you have access to when you were younger that kind of let you explore those interests while you were younger?
I didn't really do any, like, summer camps. Oh, I did do some summer camps, like, throughout, you know. I did a summer camp in high school. But throughout middle school and elementary, it was mostly just me, you know, talking a lot with my dad, who is a pathologist. And, you know, kind of just doing a lot of science fair projects, I guess, as well, out of curiosity, and, you know, just trying to solve or find the answer to questions I was curious about.
And so you mentioned science fairs. Can you talk a little bit about your other research experiences besides your most recent project, which we'll touch on later, but what kind of background do you have in, like, research and experimentation and presentation type things?
Yeah. So throughout middle school, it was mostly just me exploring a bunch of random topics. I remember, like, one of my first projects was, I think in fifth grade, observing, like, after images and how they appear, like, whenever we start really bright screens and stuff. And then sixth grade, I moved on to, like, environmental stuff. So it was just me exploring a bunch of different topics. And then in high school, I cold emailed a professor, and I got a research internship at Dartmouth, and I was able to work on a few projects. And then later on, I kind of, like, work with some other labs.
And then would you say doing science fairs and other, I guess, extracurriculars related to STEM earlier on set you up well for what you were, you know, going on to do in high school? Like, how did those experiences prepare you and shape you for your entire journey going into high school?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I really think science fair helps to cultivate your interest. I believe, like, you know, it gives you a chance to kind of explore topics, you know, in a more specific way. You are able to kind of go into the details and explore the kind of like path of scientific research and just kind of understand how you can conduct research. And it really helped me to hone in on what my interests actually are, because with science, I was able to explore a variety of fields that weren't necessarily like my current interests, like computer science and biology. In the past, I explored like environmental science, I explored animal sciences and stuff. So it really, I think, helps me to solidify what my interests were.
And then how are you able to kind of transition your interest in science from a classroom setting or from conversations with your parents to actually being something that you do hands-on with actual real-world research? Like, how were you able to kind of shift from those two stages?
So essentially, I think after I learned a little bit more about a subject, I kind of started thinking, like, what do I specifically want to learn more about, right? So let's say I was, like, interested in cancer. Within my lab, I can, you know, ask my mentor, you know, like, were there any cancer-related projects I can work on? And once you find a topic, you can try and identify a problem that you really would want to solve. And from there, you just kind of come up with, like, a design of what you plan to do and just execute it. And it's really not as easy as I say it is, but that is essentially the gist of research.
Awesome. I now want to transition to actually talk about what your most recent research project was about. So do you mind just giving us a little bit of an overview of what exactly you did?
Yeah, so essentially I used a machine learning algorithm called a convolutional neural network to try to be able to identify, like, tumors within whole slide images of squamous cell carcinoma. So basically, I trained an AI model to localize tumors, which could help pathologists and surgeons in completely removing tumors during the skin surgical removal procedure.
Can you tell us a little bit about what motivated you to pursue research in the field of intraoperative histological analysis of these carcinoma tumor margins? Like, what was your motivation and what inspired you to even go down that route?
So since my dad's a pathologist, I was able to kind of grow up a little bit watching him in his lab or doing his work. And I noticed, like, he's often really exhausted by the amount of slides that he has to go through on a daily basis. And it's a very tedious task. And training, like, an AI algorithm to be able to kind of lift this burden off his shoulders is something that I've been wanting to do for a while. And especially with the emerging, like, advancements in technology and artificial intelligence, I really think being able to harness these applications to help, you know, minimize the difficulties of many physicians' jobs is really important. So that's how I kind of got interested in this topic.
And then specifically using the convolutional neural network for this application, what kind of drove you to use that and select that as your, I guess, topic of research?
So convolutional neural networks are pretty well known for being used in computer vision tasks, which is like teaching an algorithm to look at images and identify patterns and features. So they're probably one of, like, the most well-known algorithms. And I just thought it would, like, be a good fit for this topic. And, like, that's helpful what my mentor said, like, it would be a good fit for this topic. And so in terms of, like, how I got interested in convolutional neural networks and AI, I think it's mostly from just taking edX courses online, because my school didn't have a lot of resources. They didn't have, like, a machine learning class or a CS class. We had, like, computer science principles and CSA, but learning about machine learning was something I did through online courses and YouTube videos.
And how did you decide the parameters and, I guess, overall structure of your model for analyzing microscopic images of tissue? What kind of things did you put into it that you were, like, very strategic and made sure to include?
In terms of, like, using SPNN, I used, like, transfer learning, which is where you use a pre-trained model and kind of, like, give it data that, to kind of adjust the layers, I guess. So that kind of makes it a little bit easier to train an algorithm instead of just developing an architecture by scratch. And in terms of parameters, I mostly just fine-tuned a bunch of stuff, you know, ran my model a bunch, and kind of, like, looked at existing papers to see, you know, what parameters worked for them for similar topics. And it was a lot of fine-tuning and, you know, trial and error.
Were there any challenges that you encountered through that process of adjusting it, adjusting the parameters and, you know, training it, or I guess enhancing the things that it's already been trained on?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I had to go through a lot of Stack Overflow and just, like, searching up stuff whenever my model would stop running after 4 hours or work or whatever. So, yeah, definitely a lot of difficulties.
And how long did that whole process take of fine-tuning and adjusting things?
Well, I mean, like, my whole project took around 9-ish months, I think, maybe 8 or 9. So, and then I think I, like, retrained my model multiple times. I adjusted some things because one time I realized, like, I didn't separate the patients by case, I think. So, yeah, probably like 8 or 9 months.
And what are the largest differences between current tissue analysis techniques and the approach that you used with the CNN model?
Yeah, so I think what made my project stand out was that it was able to localize tumors intraoperatively. Many existing approaches, and they're actually, like, basically existing approaches for identifying tumors in skin cancer, aren't really done intraoperatively, which means, like, during the procedure. They're done postoperatively, which companies, like, you can analyze tissue overnight, which takes like 24 to 48 hours. And my project mostly focuses on being robust and quick to run. So it's able to analyze an entire whole site image in 33 seconds and a patient case with an average rate of like 55 seconds per case. So I would say, like, it's really beneficial in potentially being applied to be used during surgical procedures in comparison to existing approaches, which usually are used for post-operative. And we're also training the model on data that's done, like basically site images that are taken from patients who have undergone intraoperative procedures.
And obviously there's like different types of things that it can be exposed to, whether that's just tumors or inflammation or benign areas. How are you able to validate the accuracy and reliability of your model to distinguish all of the different types of tissue that it could encounter?
Training at CNN was like, it was like supervised learning. So basically, like, every time my model would make a prediction, it would validate it with like labeled annotations that were done by pathologists.
Okay, and what implications do you think that your findings could have for reducing the risk of recurrence and metastasis for squamous cell carcinomas?
Yeah, of course. One of the most important like aspects of localizing tumors is to just ensure complete tumor removal, because if the pathologist or surgeon were to leave out any roots of metastasis, like these little veins of cancerous tissue, then they have the potential to grow back and spread to other organs. And that would kind of require the patient to return for a second round of tumor removal. And so what my model does is it's able to kind of identify and localize these tumors to ensure complete tumor removal and ensure that no roots of metastasis stay behind.
And then looking ahead, are there any improvements or refinements that you plan to make to your model or its applications in intraoperative settings?
We actually, like, with my group, my lab, we were able to actually publish a paper recently, and we kind of like worked on our model a little bit more. I'd say what we used a new algorithm, like instead of a ResNet 50 that I used initially, we used a ResNet 101, and just kind of like adjusted some other aspects of the algorithm to be applied in these settings.
Amazing. Now, before we continue, we do need to pause for a quick break, but when we return, Sophie will continue discussing her research project and also share some advice for our listening scientists. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Teen Scientist.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning public affairs programs weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, politics, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archive programs. WDIY, Public Affairs on 88.1 FM, streaming at WDIY.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Teen Scientist on WDIY. Tonight we have a special guest, Sophie Chen, joining us over the phone today. We just finished discussing her background and early experiences with science and also touched on her most recent research project. And now we're going to continue discussing that project and also get some advice from Sophie on what she learned throughout her entire high school journey. Now, going right back into it, Sophie, in what ways do you imagine your CNN model being integrated into current surgical practices? And what other steps do you think would be needed for its adoption into different clinical settings?
So there's a pretty big challenge in bringing artificial intelligence-based models that were trained into the real setting. I believe there are a couple that have been FDA approved, but there are so many others, so many algorithms and approaches that haven't, gotten to that stage. And so integrating my algorithm into current surgical practices will definitely be like a really long journey. We're definitely far from that right now. But I believe like some steps we can do to kind of adopt it into clinical settings is to just keep running it through and keep on training it, making it more adaptable to locations other than where I got my data from. Maybe making it more like open source or like crowdsourcing full site images from other institutions besides just, like New Hampshire, and potentially just using those to make it more adaptable. And then I would say like probably running it through trials, and I see it more as like an assistive source, like it's just a tool for surgeons, to use during the surgical procedure. So it'd be kind of like a guide right next to them, like maybe a heat map that could identify or like highlight the regions that need to be focused on.
Awesome. And that's really, really interesting stuff. And then I kind of want to touch on, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but working with mentors and medical professionals, how were you able to find mentorship at such a young age? I know that's a huge thing a lot of high school students struggle with. So can you just walk us through your whole process of finding research mentors and finding different lab opportunities? And then also just the entire process of collaborating with more like professional researchers.
For my project, I collaborated with my mentor, who was the PI of the lab that I worked in, and he was really like one of the guiding figures in helping me understand this research, because I came into this lab basically not knowing what a CNN is, not knowing much about artificial intelligence or machine learning. So he was super helpful in giving me tutorials and like resources to learn about, you know, how to conduct machine learning research, and also like listening on to the weekly lab meetings and looking at what other people in my field were working on and other people in my lab were working on. That was definitely like a driving factor in helping me work on and basically understand my project. And I also collaborated with some pathologists and surgeons who were at the lab as well in understanding like the medical background of my project. And in terms of how I was able to find this mentorship, I basically cold emailed a bunch of different professors. I think I did around like 50, which is pretty strenuous. But eventually, like, I just kind of, you know, started making a template and just personalizing it based off of different lab, you know, websites. And I mean, a lot of people do cold email, but you just have to, you know, communicate what you want and communicate what you believe you can contribute to the lab.
Yeah, absolutely. I also want to touch on the fact that you were recognized by the Society for Science by being named a Regeneron SDS finalist, which is awesome. Congratulations. That's an amazing accomplishment. But I do want to ask, what inspired you to even submit your work to this competition? And did you ever expect to walk out being recognized as one of the top 40 scholars?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people would echo my sentiment on this, including Regeneron SDS finalists, others than myself. But I completely did not plan to apply, I guess. Well, I did plan to apply, but I just didn't expect anything out of it. Like, I wasn't even sure if I wanted to submit everything because of how long and tedious the application process is. You know, there's, like, so many essay prompts and so many, like, of these little 200-word segments where they ask you to elaborate on your research. And it's actually, like, I felt like it was harder than many of my college applications. But it was definitely helpful to, you know, use my Common App and everything in part of some of the essays that were essay prompts that were given. But I think eventually I applied because a lot of my friends were also planning to apply because we were part of the summer program. And then, like, I think our director actually emailed us encouraging us to apply. And I had a couple friends that I knew who were, like, original SDS scholars from the previous year and general SDS finalists. So I guess, like, you know, my peers applied, so I also applied in the end. I really did not expect to become a finalist. I don't think anyone had. And when I just, like, got that phone call, I was just like, this is real. Like, am I dreaming? Can someone pinch me, please? You know? So it was a really great experience. And I'm super grateful to be recognized like that.
So you went on a trip to meet all the other scholars, right? You were able to, like, interact and meet with everybody else who was named in the top 40?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're done on SDS Finalist Week. It takes place, I think, early March, I guess, and they fly you out to Washington, D.C., where you're able to interact with other 39 other finalists, you know, the cohort. And yeah, it was a really great experience, and we got to meet everyone. We got to share our research interests, just kind of hang out for a week, and obviously, like, compete for the top prize.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's amazing, and I'm glad you enjoy that experience. I now want to transition a little bit to talk more about the communication aspect of it. I'm sure throughout all these experiences and everything that you've applied to and presented for, you've really had to hone in and sharpen your presentation and communication skills. So were there any strategies that you found especially effective going through that process, and how were you able to kind of, like, improve your skills, you know, as a researcher in, like, growing up throughout high school?
Of course. So growing up, I was pretty introverted. I would say, like, in middle school, I didn't have a lot of friends, and I was actually quite scared of, you know, speaking in public. But it's just something you kind of, you know, start practicing. You can start off, you know, talking to a smaller group of people, talk to your parents, and it really helps to practice and even record yourself. And I know no one likes to listen to themselves speak it, but, I mean, that's how you kind of, like, get used to your voice and get comfortable with talking. And in terms of presenting to scientific communities and general audiences, I would just say to have a logical flow of reasoning think about what you're saying. Like, does what you're saying make sense? Does it have a flow? Do you think people with all backgrounds would be able to understand what you're saying? And it helps to just kind of break down the terminology, break down anything you believe people won't understand to make it simple and enjoyable to listen to.
Awesome. And I completely agree. I think that's something I always like to ask, just because there's always like a misconception that like scientists can be very like introverted and nerdy, like you mentioned before. But it's a huge part of it is being able to, you know, communicate your results and communicate your findings. I think it's a very important aspect of the sciences that's often overlooked. I now want to shift a little bit to talk more about you, but outside the sphere of STEM. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do for fun, whether that's in the arts, athletics, volunteering? What does Sophie do outside of research?
Outside of research, I really like playing the violin, reading a lot of random books, and I've recently been getting into some poetry. I'm reading Leaf of Grass by Walt Whitman right now, and I also really love making collages, so I guess I'm kind of like an artsy, maybe humanities, not really a humanities person.
And how have you been able to manage your time and stay motivated throughout the entire research process and also throughout high school, managing and balancing all these academics and extracurriculars?
I think, like, it's totally okay to not really be great at managing your time. I definitely had a lot of procrastination issues, especially since I submitted my SPS application the day before, which is not great. But I would just say, like, kind of have a good to-do list in your mind. It doesn't have to be written down. It can have, like, a mental to-do list. And just think about, like, how would you feel once you get that task done? I think, like, something that was really gratifying and motivated me was just seeing the output of your hard work, just, like, seeing the results and, you know, looking at everything you've worked on come together. So just try to be motivated by the end goal, but also try to teach yourself to enjoy the process of, you know, working hard and finishing stuff.
And then more broadly, is there any piece of advice that you would give to other high school students who are also interested in pursuing research or engaging in the STEM fields? How would you recommend that they get started and make an impact?
So I would say don't be afraid to explore a bunch of different topics. It's okay if you try something and then you're like, oh, this isn't my thing. You know, I'm not really interested in this topic. Just feel free to explore different subjects. And once you find a subject you really like that you are genuinely passionate about, and work hard, you know, to find out how you can learn more about it. What can you do to expose yourself more to these topics? Who can you reach out to? What resources can you find? What projects can you start? And it's just totally fine to, you know, go through some trial and error, totally fine to go through failure. Like, that is how you grow and that's how you learn. And just don't be afraid and just do things that you're passionate about. Because when you're passionate about something, then that makes research fun. That makes the scientific process a lot more enjoyable.
And can you share with us any obstacle or challenge that you faced in the past 4 years or in general throughout your life that you think impacted you in a certain way, and how were you able to overcome it?
I would say, like, probably the biggest obstacle in throughout high school was just not knowing a lot of resources that were available. Like, I wasn't aware of Olympia as much until I went to the summer program, and I basically didn't have access to a lot of, like, resources that people from, you know, other locations would have access to. Like, we didn't have, you know, machine learning classes. We didn't have a lot of, like, computer science classes besides AP ones. And, of course, I know there are other high schools who don't even have APs. But it was just kind of hard for me to kind of explore the field of CS and AI, especially since there weren't any women where I lived, like, who could kind of serve as role models and guides in the process of just, you know, exploring these topics. So I had to kind of resort to online resources and, you know, people outside of my little bubble to kind of learn and grow.
Yeah, definitely. And so you said you're a senior, you've graduated from high school. First of all, where are you going to school this fall?
Yeah, I'll be attending Harvard.
What are you studying there?
I'm going to be studying computer science and biology.
And so with that, what are your future goals and aspirations? Like, you know, long term, are there any research projects that you're looking forward to be a part of, whether that's continuing one like this or starting in a new field? And then I guess career goals too. What are you looking to kind of pursue later down the line?
I would say, like, I'm definitely planning to continue research in college. Like, this summer I'll be working at the Broad Institute, and I'm actually going to be doing, like, wet lab research, which is a lot different than computational. And honestly, like, I'm not exactly sure what my future goals are. I could, like, you know, I'm really interested in maybe doing startup for like biotech, or maybe joining a startup, or potentially even going to med school. I'm not exactly sure yet. But, you know, uncertainty is something that I've encountered and I believe like will eventually be sorted out in the future. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm just excited for college.
No, for sure. And I think it's totally fine to not have a clear cut view of what you want to do. I think that's totally fine. But I'm excited to see where everything leads you. I'm sure you'll do great things. Lastly, where can our listeners go to learn more about you and your research?
Yeah, so if you want to learn more about like my SCS project, it's available on the Society for Science website. And I do have a LinkedIn. Yeah, that's basically it.
Well, perfect. So thank you so much for joining us, Sophie. We really appreciate you sharing your research and your experiences with us. It's so exciting to see other young people make such great impacts on the world. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to Teen Scientists tonight. I'm Raina Malhotra, and I'll see you next time.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to WDIY.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.